Welcome all to my talk about beta programming we visited. I will talk about web services and tool generation, how we do it in KDE or how we do it in one certain experimental module in KDE. My name is Cornelia Schumacher, and some of this code I will present was written by Tobias Koenig, who unfortunately isn't here, but I'm happy to present his work also. So what I will be talking about is I will give a short introduction of what happened so far, and then give some more information about the code project, which is the name of the module where the code is. I will talk about KXML compiler, which I already presented last year in the first metaprogramming talk, what happened there, and then go on to the new stuff, which is the KWSDL compiler and tool, user interface generation tools. Somewhat warning, this all is experimental and it's kind of a playground for testing out ideas. It's not finished and not bug free yet, but I think these are interesting, it's interesting stuff. And, so you are happy to experiment with looking at this most data in the future. So last year I gave a talk about metaprogramming in KDE. We talked basically about the technology behind KConfig-XT and what we else have in KDE. We actually have a lot of meta programming stuff in KDE. And I showed last year how a Raspberry code is generated, how the KConfig-XT code works, and I presented the KXML compiler, which is able to generate code to pass and write XML data. So as proof of concept, I implemented a resource for showing the feature plan data of KDE, which is, as you know, an XML file living in the subreddit repository, and this was read by the generated code, which was written by the XML compiler. So that was last year. So we basically had some unfinished KXML compiler, which was addressing the XML data stuff. We had some broken schema parser. We had some library, which made it easier to generate code, and a small command line utility. So this was last year, and we expanded on this. And this year, the module is more complete, and we have addressed two new areas. One is an area of web services, and the other is the area of the user interface generation. So I will present these two stacks we have here. One is the KXML compiler and XML data editing stuff, and the other stack is the WSDL, the web services part, which consists of parsers for parsing the formats used in web services, and the code generator and the user interface generator. So in my talk, I will go through the different components we see here and tell a bit more details about this. The base of the code generating is the so-called libcode, which is a pragmatic implementation of representing C++ code in C++. So you can generate code by this. It's not meant to be a complete theoretical correct implementation of representing code. It's just for to make it easy to write code, generate code. That's the more interesting thing of meta program. You always have to go through this indirection. So libcode contains classes abstracting files and classes, functions, variables, and some verbatim code. It also has some special support for constructions like state machines. It contains code to auto-generate licenses and license headers and automatic support. It has a small framework for actually generating the code, for printing the code, which makes use of a style class so you can adapt the generated code to your preferred coding style, if you like, or you just use the defaults. As I said, this is a pragmatic solution for generating code. It's not meant to be a full-blown abstraction of C++ code. So one example, how you would use this. This is a snippet from the KXML compiler code, just some stuff writing a function. So you can define a function in with an name, right element, and the type, and then you add some verbatim code, you add a type declaration for the string, and then there's a tag computed from information which comes from elsewhere. And there you see some of the more problematic things of metaprogramming, because you get crazy constructs like this where you have to escaping code because you generate code writing its metadata. So that's something which is part of the challenge and the fun when you do stuff like that. Okay, and then you just add more code. There are similar functions and similar classes for creating variables and whatever you need to write code. On top of libcode, there's a small command line tool, which is a utility for generating code. I use it mainly for my personal needs to generate some templates for new classes or dialogs. It's also able to create a complete GearSlave template. For this, it's quite useful to have tools which do this, because especially if you have GearSlaves with dependencies and you have to get function names right and class names, and they have to be the same desktop files as in the code. If you do it by hand, you always get it wrong. It doesn't work at the first try. And so having a template, it's easier to do this. It also has some code to add properties to classes, but that's really only some smaller hacks. It's not meant to compete with the IDE, which does this in a more structured and more correct and probably also more useful way. But it's a handy tool for simple tasks. It also has one option, a codify option. So we saw this escaping code. So this is something which is hard to get right when you write it by hand. So the tool is able to create, to take a C++ file and create code which generates the file you put in. So you get the generating code, the first version you can use as a base, but all the escaping is already correct. As a template you can start with, and then you can add all the other stuff you need. Just a short overview of the command line options. One feature I like in this tool is, and we should make more use of, is it's able, if you create a template class, just a template, an empty template, if you start with a new class, it's able to request the KDE address book for the WMI entry, and you get automatically your name into the generated code. So that's one feature which is really nice, and you should also make use of this in your code. Okay, the KXML compiler, which is also based on libcode. Last year it was a read-only implementation, it didn't contain the code to write XML, so this has been added in the meantime. I also tried to implement a second pass implementation. The first implementation was based on Qdom, and I tried to experiment with generating a parser which is optimized on the schema of the XML data you want to pass. So you don't have to check all the generic possibilities of XML, but you can just use the knowledge you have about the structure of the file to generate optimized code. So this was some interesting experiment. I stopped with it when the second parser was faster than the Qdom-based implementation. I don't know if it really is worth spending that much effort in this, but it might be an option if performance really is a problem. So the KXML compiler was based on a RelaxMG scheme. It still is. XML schema is currently missing, but we'll add this. So I experimented with RelaxMG because I like this schema more than the more complex XML schema specification. But as XML schema is more widely used, it's probably a good idea to also support this. As I said, it's still incomplete, it's experimental code, but I would love to have this in a more mature way, because it saves you writing so many boring code where you have to iterate over DOM trees or whatever, write XML parser stuff, and it's able to just create classes you want to have to access XML code from your code. Another thing which I experimented with is the software formatting when writing XML, because I wanted to use it for the feature resources. I also was hesitant to edit the feature data in a Subversion, and it would change all the formatting and it would create a really, really big diff. So I tried to implement this, but that's quite hard. And I'm not sure it's really worth the effort. As I said, XML schema is complex, but it's a very widely used implementation or a standard recommendation for formally describing XML documents. There are some alternatives for this. The most widely known is probably VTD, which is, comes from the early days of XML, or before XML even. It's not very expressive, so that's not really an option. RelaxMG is nice because it has really a theoretical background, and it's quite nice specification, but it's not as commonly used as the XML schema. I also had a look at two other schema languages. One is Schematron, which is more works in the way we know from SSLT. So it's not a grammar, but it defines some rules to find tree patterns in the XML data. And there's another interesting schema language, which is very lightweight, which is Xamplatron, which basically just uses an XML instance to describe the format of the data. So these are all interesting alternatives. At the end, we settled for XML schema to base our code on, because that's what is most widely used, which is using WSDL definitions. And we also found a parser who already was able to parse this data. This was done by Tobias. He took an implementation which is available on SourceForge, which is in C++ from the WSDL project. And this was done in plain C++. He adapted it to KDE Qt conventions with passing few strings and so on, fixed some memory leaks in the code. And it's basically a fork of this, and it's able to create in-memory schema representation, which is suitable for being used by KDE programs. It handles all the basic stuff, the simple types, complex types, namespaces. It's complete enough for parsing the XML schema, which is used in most of the web services description, which are out there. It's not really fully complete, so the namespace handling needs improvement, and unions and groups aren't supported yet. But that's also something which can be added. And as I said, it's able to pass the user's schemas. So it's good enough for the WSDL part of all this. So WSDL, as you probably know, is the web service description language. It's also a standard to formally describe network services. It describes them as some kind of endpoints to exchange messages in an abstract way, and then you have bindings which bind this abstract communication definition to complete protocols like SOAP or HTTP GET and POST or MIME. So the SOAP binding is the most widely used one, and that's also what is interesting for us here. So Tobias wrote a parser for WSDL. It's able to pass the descriptions. It handles all what is actually needed, so it handles parsing the messages, the ports, bindings, services, which describe where the service actually lives. It makes use of the XML schema parser because XML schema is used in WSDL descriptions to describe the objects, which the parameters which are exchanged by the functions, the more complex, which are not easy, just a string, but more complex objects. And the WSDL parser is able to be used with the important publicly available web services, which are Amazon, Google, eBay, and there are probably some more, but these are the most widely known ones. It's also intended to pass the GroupWise WSDL, which can be used in contact for the GroupWise resource. So this would make it possible to get rid of the GSOAP code. I think this might be a way to make Will happy. And it also support, yeah, it supports the soft binding. The other bindings are not supported yet, but that's good enough for what we actually want to use and what we have here. On top of this parser, there are two generators. One is the code generator, which is KWSGL compiler. And this is similar to the KXML compiler. It takes a WSDL description and generates all the code which is necessary to access the web service, which is described by this WSDL file. So you get classes which are able to natively handle the web service. It's based on the WSDL and the code for generating the code. What you get is C++ classes which represent the messages which are exchanged, and classes which represent the arguments which are exchanged. There's generated a serializer which handles all the XML reading and writing, because SOAP is an XML-based format. And it also generates a transport class which does the actually I/O to the web service. So this uses the standard KDE technology, and this is a nice thing because you get all this the integration and all the support for SSL and proxies and whatever for free. This is one of the problems we had with the GSOAP approach. We took the Google's resource because that wasn't the native KDE framework, so we had to do quite some hacks and some extra work to integrate it with the KDE framework to make sure that the password you put in the dialogs you get when you use the qslaves is reused in the web service. The transport class is done in some abstracted way, so it could be exchanged by some other implementation not using the KDE technologies, so you could add a git-only transport class, for example, if you like. On top of all this code, there's a service access class, which basically provides the stubs for accessing the web services functions. And so you can natively use the functions of the web service in your C++ code, in a TypeScript way, arguments are checked, and so on. And you don't have to care about all what's happening in the background, or the XML data conversion, and actually accessing the data on the web, and so on. So that's a nice way for making KDE programs be able to directly access web services, wherever these are. You only need the WSDL description, and then you can create all the code, which writing manually is a really boring and annoying task. One step further, there's another standard, which is WSCL, the Web Service Conversation Language. And this standard addresses the problem that web services often have some kind of logic which is on top of the actual function calls. So you need to call the functions in the specified sequence. You have to log into the web service before you can use other functions, or there are some logical restrictions, so you have to add something to your shopping cart before you can check out, stuff like that. And there's a standard to abstractly describe some of these dependencies between function calls, which is WSCL. And this is actually quite a simple standard. So we have an implementation which passes these descriptions, which implements the complete specification. And you can associate this with the WSDL description, and so you can generate something just based on this web services conversation language if it's available. If not, then you can just use the WSDL description. So, that's all the base we need for coming to the interesting part of the user interface creation. Tobias wrote a tool called Kryn, which is able to create a user interface for a web service on the fly. So, the only thing you need is you put in a WSDL description, and then you get a user interface which is able to interact with the web service. We know this from there are implementations which do this in the web, but on KDE there wasn't available such a thing. So this is the first implementation I know of the world which does this in KDE. It's able to use WSCL to specify the flow of messages, but that's not a requirement. You also can just use the WSDL file, but then you don't have the information about how messages are connected with each other. It generates for all the types of data we have, and the functions and the arguments, the specific user interface representations, so the elements what you need to put in the data for calls or to show the data, you get back. And then all the XML handling, HTTP interaction and so on, all what you need for actually implementing the web service is done by the framework, and the user doesn't have to care about this anymore. Okay, let's learn words and look fewer, so I will show some screenshots. I will do this at using the example of the Google Web Service, which has the advantage that it's very simple. It provides the search functionality which Google has, and it's basically three functions. It's one to get the cached page, it's one to get a spelling suggestion, and it's one to do a search for Google. And the API also includes some objects to represent the search results. To access this, you need a license key, which is available for free for personal use. You can do 1,000 calls per day with this key, and you have to register at Google. So that's a bit annoying, but I think it's required for Google to keep track of the service. There's a WSDL file available on the Google server, which describes this service. I won't show this, it's quite boring. Instead, I will show the user interface which is generated to access this. So what you do with the ping tool of Tobias is you just start the tool, get the URL of the WSDL file, and then the tool gets the WSDL file, passes to WSDL, which is the contained in the file, passes the schema, and generates the interface to access all the functions which I'll describe that. And so the main window of the tool is this one, where you get these three functions which I defined in the web service. And when you click on the spelling suggestion, for example, you get another window which provides inputs for the arguments you have. So the web service description specifies that you have to put in a string, which is used as key, and you have to put in a phrase, which is then sent to the server. And when you press on the send button, you get the results back, which in this case is just a string. So you get a spelling suggestion for Academy. So Google writes an Academy with a C. It's a very simple function, now to a more complex function, like the search. The search function, when you click on this, you get a window which provides inputs for all the arguments the web service function has. So it also takes a key, it takes a query, it takes some numbers to represent how many results you want to have, some flags, some boolean flags, some string flags. And so we can put in here that we want to search for Academy, we want to have three results. So the GUI actually isn't that pretty, but I think it's better than manually sending XML files to a server. Actually, for Google, it's pointless to create such a GUI because they have a great HTML interface. That's not the case for most other web services. But Google still is a good example because it does some interesting stuff and it's very simple. That's a request. If you press the send button, you get the result back. So now this isn't actually very user friendly, but it's a GUI containing all the information you get back. It's still easier to use this than reading the XML files. You get a count of the results, you get an item list of the search results, you get the query back, you get the search time back. Oh, quite fast. And if you click on one item, GUI for another object is created, which is the one single search result. So in this case, if you search for Academy, you get something back which says 9 days with an exciting program, which is very nice. The drawback is that it's a link to the conference of last year. So we have to improve on our marketing for this year's event, I think.
Can I just everything in this is turned into one of those boxes with added.
Yes, Tobias actually didn't implement a read-only user interface. So he just reuses the editing interface for displaying the results. So you can edit stuff here, but it doesn't make sense in this case. But if this would be the input to an argument to a web services function, then you could create the necessary items there. That's one of the problems of having unfinished experimental code. But it shows, I think it nicely shows the concept of generating just the user interface for all this stuff. Okay, that was the web services part. Now I'm going back to pure XML data and show how I implemented an approach to generate the user interface for editing XML data on the fly from the schema. That's the code. So the problem with this is generating user interface. In some cases it's quite easy, in some cases it's quite hard. And one problem is that you have to find a way to tune the user interface with the right parameters, so you are able to add the information you cannot extract from the formal descriptions. If you have, for example, XML data, you have a schema, which is very nice for describing the structure, which contains all the information about the types and so on, but it doesn't really contain information about user visible labels, for example. It might be, but not necessarily. For some other thing, like kconfig.xd, we have most of this information. We have quite nice information about the data, and which is also usable by user interfaces. So the approach I took with this is to not generate the user interface directly from the data, from the schema, or the kconfig.xd description, or whatever, but use an intermediate abstract user interface description, which then is used to create the user interface. So we have two steps. We have one to create this intermediate description, and the other step is then to create the actual user interface. And these are quite separated. You can put the additional information you need at this intermediate description, and then you can generate the user interface for the original purpose. I searched a while for formats which would be usable for this, and the best fit I found is XForms. XForms is the successor of the normal HTML forms, which are part of the HTML standard. It's now a W3C recommendation. It's not really implemented yet. There are some browsers which can do this, but it's not in a state that it's really widely used yet. But it's quite certain, I think, that it will become the standard to create HTML forms. One nice thing about the standard is that it's purely XML-based, so it's able to handle XML data, and it's also a standard which is modular, so you can use it in different ways. It specifies standard user interface elements, like the input of a string, input of password, which is secret, multi-line edit, labels, whatever. The basic inputs we also know from the basic languages. So that's the most important inputs. It also includes a way to group these user interface elements, so you can create correlations between the elements. And the interaction with the data, which is edited by the forms, is done via a pure XML model. So for each XForm description, there's not only a description of the form in terms of user interface elements, but there's also an XML model, which includes instance data, which is then referenced from the user interface elements by using XPath references. So with XForms, it's possible to directly edit XML data, which is on the server, if the browser actually implements it. The XForm standard also contains a quite complex processing model with specification of lots of events. That's a complex part, and that's something which is very important for a web browser, but for the application I use it for, it's not really relevant. As I said, one nice feature of XForms is that they are modular, so you can embed them in host languages. The most popular one will certainly be the embedding in HTML, so you can use it just as normal forms for HTML pages, but it's also possible to embed them in other languages. So what I did is specify a host language for XFont for creating user interfaces for editing XML data. So that's the basic approach. I see this a bit as a pragmatic XFont way, so it's not a full implementation, it's just what I need for creating the elements which I need. Although XFont is quite nice and also quite complete, it is lacking an element for heterogeneous lists. It contains some relatively complex structures to edit uniform lists, but if you have lists which can contain different items, which is normal for XML data, where you have normally elements which can have sub-elements of different forms, then you need support for lists which can actually contain different items for the uniform list. So I had to add this one to my language. And this also includes support for data-driven item labels, so we can have item labels based on actual data. I will show this when I show you the actual user interface. Okay, how does such a description of user interface look like? I chose again to use the example of the KDE feature plan. So, description. It's a simple XML file. I think you probably know this, or most of you know this, which just describes a list of features which can have categories. It's a nested set of categories and features with some data on it, like a summary and who's responsible for this. So this is part of the description specifying the user interface for this. It's all based on form. So the top level element, it's categories, and then you can have single categories in the XML file. And this describes what user interface is needed to edit a category. So the category, which is referenced by XPath reference. So for editing category, you need a name for the category, which is an attribute of the category element, which is indicated here also in XPath syntax. It has a user visible label, which is used in the GUI as a label to associate it with the input. And then you have a list which can contain two different classes of items. It can contain subcategories, which are here referenced, or it can contain a feature. So each category can have one or more categories and one or more features in the list. And we have labels for these entries here. So the label of a category would be constructed of a string and an argument, which is then replaced by the attribute name of the category element. So you can create lists which actually have useful labels in it. The same here. The feature, the best way to describe a feature is to take the first characters, which is here indicated by the truncate argument of the summary, and take this as a label in this. So that's one form. There are more of this in the description, but I think that should show the basic concept, how this is used. So the engine, which works on this representation, takes all these forms and resolves the references to the XML data, and it has a common user interface creator, so it can create the widgets which are required to edit this data. One thing which is quite important when doing this is that you're probably not able to create one user interface which fits all possible applications. So it's necessary to make it possible to tune the generation. So I introduced the user interface handler, which is the central place where decisions about how to lay out stuff in the user interface, or how to nest stuff in the user interface, or some kind of layering is handled. So you will immediately see the need for this when I show you the examples. because they are making use of a very simple handler. Okay, so that's some of the demo data I used. That's a very that's one feature of the feature plan. And I will show you what happens when we start the program on this data based on this description. So it's actually the call I used here actually uses a more full XML file, but I just took this one example to demonstrate how this works. So the first one, the main window is showing the basic list of all features. In this special file, it only contains one category. It has shown the reference it has, which XML element is this, and he has shown which form is presented in the user interface. And this now is one of his standard list elements, which in this case only contains one byte. If you click on this, you get the list of all categories, of all items which are contained in the KDPIP feature plan. So we have to get all the categories which come from all the categories which are there, which are the applications which are prepared to KDPIP. You see again the XPath to the element, which is represented by this category. So we click on the KMail item, we get a list of features. So here you see it's basically the same as before. We get the list again, which has a name, you can edit this. You see these labels which are generated from the text in the summaries of the features. They're truncated because some features contain quite a lot of text there. There's no separate label entry, so the summary, the first part of the summary is used. And when we now click on the single feature, we get the editor for feature, which contains the data. There's the data, summary, there's the status edit where you can set the state, you can set the target of which release the feature will be implemented. And there's a list of responsibles who are working on this feature. So this one is the client-side IMAP filtering, which is, well, I think it's done before 3.5. I'm not sure, was it a conversion? Whatever. Okay, and if you click on one of these responsibles, you get the editor for creating this. And here you see the entry in the list is created from these two elements, which are actually attributes in the XML file, which are here put to the title. Okay, so creating the user interface from this intermediate description isn't that difficult. It's hard to create a good GUI for this, but one step that is still missing is to actually use the XML schema as base to create this intermediate description. So this would make it possible to just take some XML data. Often it contains a reference to the schema. You could get the schema from the server where it lives, if it's available. And then you could do all this data access and editing in a transparent way. You just would need an XML file, you start the KXForms tool on this, and you get the user interface to create it in place. And by the KDE kiosk flags, you even get this for free, that you can edit it on the server. If you have the FTP server or whatever, or WebDAV server, where XML data is located, you can just create the editor for this by using the schema of the tool. One problem with creating this from a schema is that not all information is contained there, or not necessarily. So probably we need some way to customize this, to add labels and hint text, or what's this help, or however we want to call it, and also to add some layout and hierarchy hints. This could be done by annotating the XML schema. There's a way to annotate schema inline, so there's an annotate element in the schema where you could put in further description, Or if you don't have control over the schema, you could also use some external file to add some links to this for generation of the schema, the KXForms description for the schema. So unfortunately, this all is theory up to now. I haven't implemented it yet, but I'm quite confident that it's possible to do this in a decent way. Some other applications of this technology I would see in KConfig XT. One thing which annoys me from the beginning, since I started with the KDE, that writing configuration dialogs is really annoying. They don't like to do it. And so I would like to create this configuration dialogs automatically from KConfig XT description, because they contain all the information we need. And I think most of the user interfaces we have in KDE can be automatically created there. It would have some advantages. One of them is that it's not that much work to create user interfaces for configurations. Then it's probably also less hurting to throw away the configuration options, because you don't use code you have manual written. So maybe this is a way to clean up the configuration of KDE. We need some more clever layouting logic for this, and but the nice thing is that it can be addressed separately and generic. Another thing is that currently I do lots of the XML handling in a very basic way, and just implement some basic implementations, but it would probably be better to integrate with the existing framework. So, for example, an XPath implementation, that is something I actually don't really want to write. And I've written a basic stub for this, which does the job for now. But I don't know what in KDE is and how usable it is, but it might be a good idea to integrate with this. Okay, I come to my conclusion. The code project has grown in the last year. Tobias has spent a lot of time in it, and I also worked on this quite a bit. It's a playground for some ideas. I think it's fun to work with this, because it saves work and it's a challenging code, and it's really fun to work on. It covers some topics like code generation, the variety of XML technologies and user interface generation. If you want to look at the code, there's a branch in KDE CVS. Branches were code X code. There you find the XML compiler, the KOWCI compiler, also the KXForms implementation. It's a directory which is separately compiled, so it doesn't have any dependencies on the other stuff. In reality, it's a branch of KDPIM for historical reasons, but it's a separate one for this. Okay, that's it. Questions? Hello?
Can you go back to the XML description of the user interface? Sure. You have the XML description of the user interface?
Yeah.
Can you go back to that?
Sure. This one?
Yes. I think you may want to rethink how you combine labels with references, because I think this will pose a problem for international navigation, because it's very hard to translate, for example, the item label that you have there with categories.
Wouldn't it just be a string call where you replace the argument by the normal argument you would have in the IATN call? This just map to so of course we would have to extract the information for localization from these files, yes. Maybe, but
well, we may want to rethink whether we want to keep it like this or use the same notation that we use for our KDE, so that it becomes easier to take a string out of this file, pass it on to translators, pass it back in, and
that's a good thought. Is it?
Internationalization issue doesn't really exist, because KXForms is not really a new standard. Such standards exist for some long time, But the problem has always been that there has not really been any official standardization. There has been one attempt to standardize such a case form like standard, which was called WSUI at Oasis. But unfortunately, the sponsoring companies have not really pushed the standards for usage, so it has gone under, and nobody really knew about who else was working on it. So the University of Stanford has come up with a new standard, which is called WSGUI, which is just the G in WSGUI. And this is basically what KSFORM is doing, except that internationalization has been implemented conceptually. And I think that if one wants to join forces, it could be quite easy to implement all the features also offered by WSGUI into KSFORM. So, for instance, there's also support for web services which do not follow the WSDL method, but for instance, Amazon's OpenSearch web service, which is REST-based, which is also an option for Wikipedia. I don't know if the Wikipedia people are here, but they talk about creating REST-based web services. So one could unify different web services under the root of this KSFORM implementation. I think it's not too difficult to do this because the standard is quite the same. I'm also using XFORM as the core part of the dialogue generation.
That's a good point. I also had to look at this WS UI, and I didn't actually follow it anymore because it, for my purposes, it was a bit web services centric, and some things weren't possible. But I think it would be a good idea to combine these efforts in some way. Yes. Martin?
Do you think that we can use some of these techniques to implement something like functionality we see with Lotus Notes to do workflows with Contact and Colab? So that means that you can generate something like a form which is more active, and you can send it around via email technically, and then people can fill it out and send it to some other person, etc.?
That might be an option, yes. I don't know if for creating actual forms which are sent to users, more strict way to specify the user interface might be better. So I'm not really sure. It depends on the application, but of course it's meant to also serve for this kind of purposes. Yes.
Would it be possible to automatically generate plugins for Qt Designer to use these widgets to be able to lay them out using Qt Designer and the Qt Designer forms? Because that actually seems like it might be a really good way to lay out the GUIs.
That's an interesting idea. Yes. I don't see a reason why it wouldn't be possible. So might be worth a try.
There's been some discussion at the Academy about doing some functionality which is currently in KDLibs with external applications like out of process. It looks like it's important that when an application talks to this other process that it's able to customize the GUI on the receiving side. You think that the work you have done is a suitable ground for doing that, so that not just calling the other program to, like for example, the file dialog, but also sending over some XML data of yours to do the customization. Good case would be the printer dialog, for example. Currently, when you get, for example, a PostScript description PPD, we only have a very crude dialogue which is shown, probably you know that. It's just simple parsing. I think that could help a lot, so that we get real selections and so on.
That also might be an option. I think also for this case, it's always a question, how far do we want to go with specifying the user interface? For example, for the print dialog, it could also be possible to just transfer a designer file describing the user interface. That would be a very strict way, including layout and everything.
Well,
this is a more abstract way, which might be more appropriate if you have different applications. If you have different print dialogs, it might be an advantage to not specify layout.
Yeah. The interesting thing is that if you do it this way, we can ask third-party applications to also create, to call our dialog and send this XML. I don't think that we can convince them to create UI files, even though that, because it's...
That's right. So I think that the advantage of this format really is that it's much more abstract than most of other user interface text descriptions like Sybil or designer files. So that's really the advantage. Will?
As a user of
so you mean statically generating user interface code? I actually haven't thought about this very much. So what we have is the statically generated code to access the web services. For the user interfaces, sure, you could also generate just code creating this interface. Well, it would be quite some work to add to extract this, but it would be a second backend for this, something like that. So there's no reason why you couldn't take this case forms description and create, for example, a cute designer file for this, or directly generate C++ code generating. I think that's possible. I think that's one of the advantages of having really a specified intermediate format instead of doing this all in one step.
Yeah. Can you comment on the performance issues? How fast is that system?
Well, I actually don't have any idea about how fast it is because I never noticed any problems. I think it deals with user input, so generating the user interface in general is much faster than needed. It's not that you would create 1,000 dialogues in a second. It's just you need to create what the user actually uses. That's very limited in size. So I don't think there are much performance problems. Any other questions? Yeah?
A little unclear as far as the usage scenarios for accessing the web services. Is it that when you are looking to access, let's say, for example, the Google interface that you had shown, is it that you design an application or you generate the forms in advance based on the schema that you get from them and then tweak it and then deploy? Or is it that when you access, it dynamically generates the form?
The current implementation dynamically generates the form. So it's probably not really a good base for a real application. But it's a good way to access the web service in a dynamic way, for example, for testing and so on. For generating a user interface, if we want to create a user interface from the description and then tweak it and tune it and make it a real interface, I think we need something like Will proposed, so to have a tool which generates actually a user interface from this description as code, so you can make use of this. At the moment, it's really a dynamically generated interface.
Okay, so when the user accesses the website, the compiler has to run.
No, it's just generated at runtime. It doesn't compile any code. It creates the widgets on the fly.
Oh, okay.
Any more questions? No? Okay, then that's it.
Yeah. No. Yeah. don't really consider it loud, but I'm a loud only.